You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, the longer that I am in the world of politics, the longer I realize that everything is about shifting perspective and the understanding that everything changes. Octavia Butler wrote in Parable of the Sower, everything that you changes, changes you. Everything that you touch changes you. The only constant that we have is change. And yet those that are in power, those that have been elected as our representatives, or those unelected bodies like the Supreme Court, refuse to recognize the present and reconcile that with policies from the past. We just saw this week that the state of Arizona passed legislation from the 1800s to ban abortion. They're referring to a law that was in existence before women had the right to vote and before Arizona was even a state when Lincoln was president. How do you look at laws from the 1800s and think that they will work in the 21st century? What I realize more and more is that those that are in power are so stuck and stagnant without imagination and the ability to reconcile with the reality of our current present times. What do I mean by that? I mean that you're looking at gun legislation, for instance, through the lens of a time and space in this country when AR-15s, machine guns, bazookas, magazine clips didn't exist. Where we didn't have police departments, where people lived miles and miles apart from one another. When those gun laws were created, America didn't have a population of 330 million people. We didn't live inside of a country at that time when there were more guns than there are people. So how does it make sense then that we continue to use the same lens from centuries ago on today. We use the racist lens, right, of the 20th century and prior to dictate our future because we refuse to recognize that America is not a white Christian nation. It was founded by Puritan zealots and founded, I use that in quotation marks. It was ransacked, pillaged by right-wing zealots that didn't want to pay taxes because they wanted to the freedom to oppress. That's the true story about the founding of America. Right? And so I just realized that when you don't have the ability to change the systems and world around you, the best thing that you can do is begin to change yourself. To begin to open up the aperture to see things in a different way through the lens of today. And elect people who do the same. Because this stance of make America great again lacks the imagination, the innovation, and commitment that is actually going to continue to make America one of the major powers in the world. We are at a critical tipping point in so many ways. And if we don't begin to shift our perspective and ask real questions about what does freedom look like? What does it taste like? What does it smell like? When we talk about gun reform, what do we mean? What kind of society, what type of country, what type of world do we want to live in? Let's get specific. So in my conversation today with our dear friend, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, we get into the ways in which his book, What We've Become, is about recognizing that the path that gun reform activists have been on is not the right one. And it is okay to stop, reflect, and pivot. Because staying the course when the course ain't right is just fucking dumb. And at this point, dangerous. So the question is, how do we shift perspective in order to create the reality that we all want? That conversation is coming up next with our friend, Dr. Jonathan Metzl.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Folks, you know that whenever I have the opportunity to sit down with our friend, our in-house doctor, Dr. Jonathan Metzl, I am always pleased because each week we get into conversations about, you know, everything that is happening, what we are feeling, and trying to bring you some clarity in the crazy, in the chaos. So, Jonathan, how are you today, this week?
I'm hanging in there. I got a few book stops left. I'm on my way to Seattle tomorrow morning. I leave at 5 a.m. to give a talk tomorrow night at Town Hall Books in Seattle, which
Lovely.
Is going to be really cool. A really cool journalist is interviewing me in Seattle on Wednesday night, which will be, I think, the night people maybe hear. I can't remember when they hear this, but that, and then I'm going to Louisville on Monday to talk about race and health in America, which I think will be cool. Then just a couple more stops. It's been an amazing, amazing experience. Great to talk to people across the country. It's been interesting to be on a book tour at this time
yeah.
of the world. So we'll see. But I think I need a little bit of a vacation also.
What are some of the highlights been for you as you wind down?
I say a couple of things. I mean, the highlight for sure was Greenlight Bookstore in Brooklyn, New York, where you and I had incredible conversation. That was amazing. And a couple of weeks ago, I was in LA. We did this event, a huge event at the Getty with a bunch of people I was a part of. And so I got to meet like Kerry Washington and Michelle Norris and Camus Bell and all these people. So it's kind of interesting, like you pick your topic, where that topic takes you in a particular way. So the cool part has been just every conversation has been really urgent. But, you know, what I've been thinking about a lot is something that you said that I think really stuck with me, which is when we were in the back room at Greenlight Books, mm-hmm. And you said, because I said this was a hard book to write and it's a hard book to message. I still feel that way. I did the Pete Domenico podcast yesterday and he's like, tell me the book in a sentence. And I'm like, let's talk for an hour because it's hard to have a talking point about a book that's about guns and race and a critique
yeah.
of liberalism
yeah.
and kind of how we got here and stuff. So that part has been really, it continues to be hard. And I remember we were in the back room, remember at that bookstore, and you said, this is a book that people are going to understand 10 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And it still kind of feels that way. Like I'm still, it's so interesting. The book's been out now for a couple months and I'm still like, either defending the thesis or like that just weird things have happened with the message itself. The predictable stuff was a lot of pushback from liberal gun control, like my colleagues in the liberal world who didn't want to understand what I still hold as the argument, which is we have to understand how we got here to understand like why we're in a particular predicament. But like here's my question for you. This is a kind of a long-winded question. Like, here's an example of one kind of perception, which is there's a gun blog that this guy kind of defines, you know, here's all the gun books and here's what they're about. And he had like point by point on my book. And I was, you know, any publicity is good publicity. I was glad he read it. It was thoughtful that somebody was out there talking about it. But the point was like on page 10, he uses the wrong term for a gun for a bullet, which is we don't say clips, we say, you know, loads or something like that. And then on page 20, he said AR-15 and he means XM-15, like really paying attention to the terminology of, you know, his specialty, which is guns. And so I understand people read for like kind of their own expertise. They mm-hmm. want to make sure you got their thing right. But there was nothing in the entire critique about the fact that the book is actually about like race. Race was not mentioned once in the entire critique. And so I understand, like, you write a book, you want to get it right. But it's weird when you have a book out there, everybody sees like their one little part and they want to make sure you get their thing. But you kind of want to say like, hey, how about the bigger argument? How about the bigger argument of the entire book, which is not about that? So part of the question is, you know, that's what you do when you write a book. But it's interesting that everybody sees their one little part and not the bigger part. And that maybe that's a problem of me as the author.
But I'm like, no, Jonathan, but isn't that the world? Like, isn't that the struggle that we find ourselves in, which is that everyone is concentrated on their one piece instead of the entire picture? So take it and look at it this way, right? So we're having conversations and you know, we talk about democracy, we talk about health, we talk about guns, we talk about all of these different pieces. And I mean we as in like the greater we of progressives and Democrats. And we say, what is going to be the thing that draws people into this election? And so the abortion rights people are going to say it's abortion. The healthcare people are going to say it's the attack on Medicaid and Medicare. The, you know, the gun folks are going to say it's guns. Like, so it's like, while everyone has their specialty, their focus, their area of concern, right? What is the bigger picture? And I think to me, your book, the bigger picture is because we have refused and continue to refuse to have real, critical, thoughtful, engaging, and hard, excruciating conversations on race. And by we, I actually am talking specifically about white Americans refuse to have a conversation where they don't center themselves as the victims. Like, we don't get anywhere. Right. And so, like, if everything in America has to do boils back down to race and racism, and because we refuse to address that very thing, we make up all these other stories and narratives. When if you were to just tackle, and it's not like a just like it's so easy, but if you were to have honest conversations and critique about race and racism and how it shows up in any given moment, policy, whether it's sports and what happened with the NCAA and the women's game and how the white team Iowa is being framed in the press versus the black-led team of South Carolina and all of these things, we would be in a better place. But it's because we choose to ignore it, right, and make it be about anything else because we've told ourselves that conversations about race and racism are too complicated.
So let me ask you, let's use this example that I'm talking about, because I mean, this is kind of what I wanted to talk about. I guess I'm centering my book as the conversation, but it was interesting to see what happened, right? I mean, again, I'm glad, you know, you write a book, it's out there in the world. People can interpret it however they want. But what was interesting after this thing, so this guy posts, he uses the wrong terminology on page 20 or something like that. And his audience is a bunch of people who really care about guns. Like, that's really his audience. So it's great. I'm happy to talk to those people. But what happened then is none of those guys read the book. They were all like, yeah, this is another liberal guy who doesn't use our terminology and all this kind of stuff. And like, then I'm getting bombarded with like all these gun owners who just saw their one piece, which is one guy realized on page 20, I used the wrong term for bullets. And in their world, like, then that became the metaphor. So the guy who read the book only saw his little piece, which I think you're right. Everybody's reading for their one piece. And then the people who then saw it on social media, they didn't even read the book. They were then riffing off of this guy's critique, which reinforced their own critiques of liberals not wanting to go there. So one guy, I feel, misread the book. And then 10,000 other people went off of his misreading to then categorize me and riff back on me. And so, again, that's how our algorithms work. Now, the question I have is, should the gun guy have been reading for racism? In other words, was his blindness not seeing racism, or was it me as the author who didn't use the right term?
I see.
You know what I mean? Like, is it fair to say that he should have been reading for racism? Is it – I mean, the algorithms –
I liken it to art, right? When an artist has a canvas and they paint from their perspective, right, they're expressing themselves in what they see and feel and are expressing in that moment. How everyone else interprets that piece is going to be subject to their own knowledge and perspective and their emotions in that moment. And so while, you want people to read it for race. You wrote it in that way. But if I choose, quote unquote, not to see race, then like that's not the area that I'm going to dig into, right? Because these people, I believe, will make up an excuse about anything as to why that man that shot up all of those black people in a Waffle House, like why, like, oh, well, you know, and just pull out some obscure shit as to why this wasn't about race, as to why it was just a madman. Oh, he was just crazy. Oh, it was just this. Oh, it was just that. Because they're not willing and or equipped to do the heavy lifting around race and racism. So it is so much easier to excuse it, to make it be something else.
Well, I mean, I wrote a book about guns, so I do think it's incumbent on me to get the terminology right. Like, I do think that's a fair critique. It's just more that when you're just reading for your one thing, you don't see the bigger things. And conversely, now here's my provocation for our conversation. Conversely, like, my publisher told me I should name this book Killing for Whiteness. Like, I should make it much more overtly about race, like the title of the book. And I'm like, first of all, I don't want to be the guy who wrote Dying of Whiteness and then Killing. I'm like, I don't know. It's like, I'll never. That's like, you know, so I didn't want to be that guy. But I also, as you know from the book, there are a lot of things that are really complicated about race happening in the book. It wasn't just a story. In other words, after the Waffle House shooting happened, the story was hijacked by Sean King and other people. I write about this in the book to say, this is just overt racism. This shooter was racist. And what I argue in the book is there's a much more nuanced story about race and guns happening. That's kind of why I want people to read the book, because the story isn't just the shooter was racist. It's actually a much bigger story about what kind of bodies code as protectors and what kind of bodies code as criminals.
Yeah.
About how, somebody who codes as a protector, even if they're telling people they're going to be a mass shooter, the system rewards that particular body. So it's a much bigger story. So I didn't want it to be like some simplistic thing. I expressly didn't mention race in the title because I wanted people to like to see how the story unfolded. And let me just say, the point is, if I would have said like, this is about gun racism, I would have sold a zillion more copies because there are just like racism is its own way of reading also. And so it's also sometimes I feel like harder to complicate that story. And this isn't me complaining as an author. I'm just telling you what it's been interesting to see.
I'm wondering though, like, I mean, I guess then is there a sense of regret on your stops? Are more people likely than not to get the picture of what it is that you're painting? Or do you feel like now, in hindsight, you should have had a more race-focused title to lend itself a greater sense of clarity?
I'm happy I left it ambiguous. I guess I'm struggling now with, I mean, for me, the book, there are two main stories in the book. The main story of the book is about the Waffle House mass shooting, the story of what happened, the story of how a naked white man with an AR-15 ended up in South Nashville, killing four young adults of color and injuring four others, and how for me that story complicated the narrative about race and guns that I understood going into the story, which is about the racism of the shooter. And I understood race to be a much more disturbing and more diffuse story about the race of the system, the race of all these things. So half the story is about the story of the Waffle House mass shooting. The other half of the story is about how that, recognizing that, that the story I was telling about whiteness and guns was too simplistic, made me rethink a bunch of stuff about liberal gun control, that liberal gun control similarly had a bunch of assumptions embedded about what our policies were meant to do, mm-hmm. who we were trying to regulate, what it meant to involve the government, for example, all these other things. So I started rethinking policies, for example, like background checks that ask people to put their name in a government database, or red flag laws that invite the cops into your home to do a welfare check on your relatives. I started rethinking the racial implications of who was being policed by gun control policies. It turns out a lot of these policies were racialized in a very different way. They were actually targeting communities of color also, because those were the people who were showing up on background checks more and other things like that. So I was trying to tell, to interweave these two stories. It's a nightmare. I should have written a book about puppies like I started out to do. But I will say it's interesting for me when I go on tour, which one of those two stories people pick up on. And I guess it's just been interesting that either people resonate with the story of the Waffle House shooting, or they bring me to task for critiquing liberal gun control. And it's, but it's, I don't know, the book's about both. And I always want to say the book's about both. So I'm glad I didn't say this is a book about gun racism, because I want people to think about it. But I do agree that it takes 10 years from now, somebody's going to pick it up and be like, hey, wait a minute.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
The problem that we are having, I think collectively, is that no one wants to shift their perspective, because in order to shift perspective and pivot into a new course of action, you have to admit that something wasn't working. And I think that whether it be progressives who are like, no, we're going to continue doing the same thing over and over again, and eventually we'll wear them down, whereas the Trumpists, they just don't care. They're just blow up whatever system. I think that the reason why we can't attack Trumpism for what it is, and the reason why like we falter on a lot of issues, is because we're not interested in making the pivots in action to match the time and to match the energy that the opposition is giving us. Right? Like, we keep trying to appeal to people's moral center. We keep trying to appeal to, well, history will remember you. We keep trying to like do these things. And what you're offering is a big pause to say, actually, you know, we've been doing this for some decades now. And, you know, while we can continue to say we need red flag laws and we need these things, we know that that's not actually going to change the outcome of a lot of the violence that we are seeing. So what they want to do is nibble around the edges and say, well, at least if we get some win, that's better than no win at all. And your perspective is like, but actually, like, we're wasting time and energy because we could shift a conversation and a narrative that gets us actually what we want, instead of a little bit of what doesn't even matter.
Here's a way I think that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. And the way I would rearticulate that maybe is that we live in a world where people's implicit and explicit biases, no matter what they are reinforced all the time. In other words, you can select what news you want. You can select what feed you want. And so people are not often challenged about their own narratives. You don't have to be. And it's just a risk to challenge those narratives, which I knew writing the book. I knew the minute I started researching the shooting, I was like, oh man, this is going to take me someplace that's going to actually challenge what I thought I knew. And what's the role of that? I mean, on the one hand, you can see why there's a good reason to not challenge those narratives, right? We live in a zero-sum, winner-take-all electoral system. The algorithms of social media reinforce a kind of conformity. And if you're saying like, gosh, I thought differently about this, that's just not monetized in our social media world. There's a million reasons. I mean, you don't want a judge or a politician who gets in office and then says, man, I totally changed my mind about like this key issue. Like we live in a world where not rethinking those. So I understand that it's a challenge, but ultimately that was what made this book for me, honestly, rewarding, was that I ended up at least trying to say, like, let's take a look at what we've got here. And also the stakes of not questioning that. Like for guns, for example, they're incredible people doing incredible work. I support them. I'm one of them. But I would also say, like, if you're here in Tennessee, we're getting our butts kicked right and left about every gun bill. The Supreme Court overturned New York's gun laws. The Supreme Court is about to, I think, legalize bump stocks. Like, you can't say that we're winning right now. And so part of what I'm trying to say is you have to understand like kind of how we got here to think about how we can maybe tweak our strategy a little bit. And the story is incredible, but you know, I think you're right. Maybe 10 years from now, people will be like, hey, that guy who was saying it before or something.
I mean, I'd like to say that it will be sooner, but I think that, you know, this is also like a lesson in, you know, sociology and human nature and how people take on new information and like the timeline of that adaptation, right? And so no one wants to be, and I don't think, and again, like I'll just say this in closing, like I don't think that you're a contrarian in terms of saying like, oh, liberals, like you're dumb and you've been doing it wrong all along. I think that you're looking at this and saying, what do we really want?
Yeah.
And I think that too often we don't stop and say, you know, oh, we're fighting for freedom. We're fighting for this, that, and the other thing. What the fuck does that actually look like? What do you actually want? You know, when we're saying gun safety, when we're saying these things, like what does that feel and look like for us, for our kids to shop, to go to school, to live, to exist? Yeah. And I think that what you're offering is like the head tilt and the perspective to say, oh, maybe we need to look at the picture this way.
And again, like I'm a doctor, I'm for prevention, I'm for health. But like ultimately what I'm trying to say in the book is that a prevention framework in an ideal world is the only framework we should put around guns. We shouldn't have injury and death. But if you're against an adversary whose aim is power, who doesn't really care about prevention at all, but they're using guns to control the courts and control you and overturn New York gun laws and overturn all these other things that aren't linked to guns, like pro-gun judges are now deciding all these First Amendment cases and women's reproductive choice cases and all these things. So if you're up against an adversary whose aim is power, the health framework is not going to be useful. And that's kind of the message for me, is that if you look, for example, at the Bruin decision, we made all these health arguments and the Supreme Court was like, yeah, we don't care. And so in a way, we had the right strategy if people were, if everybody was operating like they did with cigarettes and cars, as if saving life was the most important thing. But if you're up against an adversary whose aim is power, you actually need a power strategy and the health framework doesn't get us there. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to say is we have the wrong strategy for the adversary we're up against. That's kind
but
of that's, what I'm-
but that, so then when Pete asked you deliver your book thesis in a sentence, it needs to, like, that needs to be what it is, that we're up against an adversary that is solely about power and we were coming at it from the lens of saving lives and health, and that's not it.
Yeah.
It needs to come from a power place, period.
Okay, cool. Hey, Pete, if you're listening. Yeah. Yeah, it's not like I'm struggling with the narrative. And again, I'm at the end of the book tour. It's more just like, seeing how, I mean, it's always with a book, like you wish you would have just said that up front. But also it's interesting because it is in the book in about 30 places, but people don't see it because they're worried about if I use the right word for bullets. Like people read to reinforce, like we all do this, we reread. It's kind of like that Gary Larson cartoon where the dog only hears her name and not the million other things the dog owner is saying or something. Like we all read through our own lens, right? That's why, how we read. And so it's interesting to be an author right now who's challenging those things in interesting ways. So yeah, anyway.
Well, my friend, we will leave it there today. But
I have one more thing to say.
What's the one more thing?
Next week, let's talk about Trump becoming pro-choice. I'm so delighted that Trump is joining our side.
Please. Instead
of like trying to highlight how he's obviously being a manipulative hypocrite, we should embrace him to our side. Like start painting Trump as a liberal. That would be way like, let's invite Trump to like liberal conferences to support abortion rights. I don't know. We should picking flowers on his head.
I hate that man so much. I keep saying like the day that I am done with Trump and never have to talk about him ever again, and it will just be in the past tense. That day, I don't know what I will do. It'll be a party.
No, there is no end. We're going to Baron Trump and then Muffy Trump and then Tweaky Trump.
Nope, yeah. I don't like, this is not the Seven Dwarfs. All right, my friend. Thank you so very much, as always, for making time for Woke AF. I appreciate you so much. And folks, if you have not yet gone out and purchased or ordered What We've Become, you need to get it now. Thank you.
Take care.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF. As always, power to the people and to all the people power. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.